Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
Friday evening, my people. Welcome to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. It is Friday night. People, we have yet again plodded through another week, and here we have made it to the promised land that is Friday. I'm so glad. I'm really glad that you guys are here hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. It has been a wildly crazy week with, actually, believe it or not, more things than a missing jetliner going on. We've got tons to talk about tonight. Of course, there's all the things going on in Russia right now. But hey, one of the biggest things, of course, you know, it could trump a missing jetliner. What can I tell you, people? It is spring. Ta-da! I should have you know, angels singing or something. You know, that. That kind of thing. I'll spare you my voice. But, you know, after the winter that everyone has been through all over the country this year, I think, you know, we should be dancing in the streets. But and I know I would be the first to lead the dancing in the streets. But with that said, let us celebrate the springtime that is finally here and get to all the things that have been going on this week. Of course, you know, it is week two of the missing jetliner, and, you know, I think that, oh, my God, I just, you know, for all of the weirdness, not just because there really are so few facts to go on in this case, and that's what's so bizarre, is that, you know, just even for a split second, even for 10 or 20 seconds, if you put yourself in the place of these family members and someone that you love and someone that you care about was on that plane, it's just it's got to be agonizing. I can't even imagine. I just can't wrap my brain around what those people must be going through. And, you know, I think everybody, you know, throughout the world is thinking the same thing. You know, what would I do? But the latest on this today is that, of course, I think everybody, because, you know, media coverage, oh, my gosh, media coverage, it's been nonstop. It's been round the clock. And, you know, I think these are it's one of the unintended consequences of having a 24-hour news cycle that you've got 24 hours to fill. You have got a lot of time to kill. And if you have a case like this where there aren't a lot of facts, you've got to drag every single expert, every single consultant, every single person who might know anything about this, you know, the least little bit, you've got to drag them on with you, because it's really been insane. And before I get to the silly season part of this, let's do some serious stuff about it first. Of course, they have been searching off the coast of Australia in this southern part of the Indian Ocean, some satellite images, I believe they were Chinese, showed some debris floating in the river. It's floating in the river. Easy for me to say. Floating in the ocean. One of these pieces of debris, I believe, was about 80 feet long. Another one, not quite so much, maybe 15, 20 feet. My understanding, and, you know, I'm certainly no, you know, oceanic maritime expert, but just from what I have heard and read and just gleaned from the people that do know, is that this portion of the Indian Ocean, the southern portion of the Indian Ocean off the coast of Australia, is just one of the most vast, most remotest places on Earth. And it also, from what I understand, maybe the best way for me to describe this, just based on what I've heard and what I've read, is that sometimes if you go into an alley and there's wind gusts that are in there, and you'll see trash and debris, you'll see it kind of spinning and swirling around in that pocket of air there in that alleyway in between buildings. And it seems to me that this is probably kind of the best way to describe this area of the ocean, that it tends to collect debris and it tends to collect ocean trash. I have heard that phrase used, and so this could be it could literally be almost anything, and but again, like I say, they are searching off the southern coast of Australia. The U.S. Navy has brought in a P-8 Poseidon aircraft. I believe this has all sorts of special, you know, radar, you know, all sorts of detection and you know, computer technology that could. I heard Senator Saxby Chambliss from Georgia the other night say one of his military sources, who is knowledgeable on this aircraft, said you could find a beer can on the bottom of the ocean with it. So that's probably a pretty good thing to have out there right now. Again, here, the satellite image of debris was, one was almost 80 feet long, the other 15. Again, this is a known shipping route where sometimes things, containers and cargo, things will fall off ships and fall off vessels as they're going through this body of water. Also, this area of water, the weather is not the greatest. The water, the sea is very rough in this part of the ocean. Another thing going on here about this also is that, again, going back to the families, is that I think that the majority of the family members here involved really do not feel that the Malaysian government has been straight with them, basically. And, you know, I think if, whether it's the Malaysian government, whether it's the United States, and there's up to about 25 countries involved in this recovery rescue operation right now, that if there is any hint of hijacking, any hint of terrorism, anything like that could possibly have taken place here, they are not going to be the most forthcoming with information. If something like that is, you know, has taken place, but I think that there has to be ways to give family members some sort of consolation and some sort of data, you know, that they can kind of say, okay, here's what we know, what's going on, that they could give these people. And another theory that I have heard talked about regarding the Malaysian government is that they're way in over their heads on this. Granted, Malaysia is not the United States or the United Kingdom or you know, Australia, any one of a number of countries that had most of the passengers on this airliner been from, you know, had they been American or Australian or British or what have you, that and we certainly have the means to help them. We have the military means, we have the technological means to help them. But if we did not, wow, they're really in over their heads on this. And tomorrow will mark the 2-week point of this. And again, I this could go on for quite a long time, because just if the plane did crash and it did go down in this area of the Indian Ocean, it's going to be a big challenge to try to get the black box from the airplane, try to get any sort of debris or any sort of you know, hint or clue as to what might have gone on here. And and again, like I've said, I think we've all seen it. Oh, there's a couple of things here. This report is from Newsmax. Any oil slicks that have been found, officials are saying that any of the oil slicks that might have been found in this area, they did not believe contained jet fuel. There was something yellow floating in the water that they thought might be some sort of debris from the plane, but again, it was termed sea trash. You know, and really the only facts that they have is just what you've been hearing, you know, for the past, well, 2 weeks now, tomorrow, is that this plane deliberately turned back across Malaysia. It was on its way to Beijing. It was on its way to China. Made this weird left turn back over Malaysia, and after that, right now, it's anybody's guess. It says here police are of course, you know, keeping the possibility of hijacking, sabotage, terrorism, any, you know, some sort of mental health issue with the pilots. You know, everything is on board right now as far as what actually might have happened here. But again, like I said, when you have something like this go on, you also, you have the silly stuff that is going to happen as well. And that might seem kind of contradictory given such a serious situation like this. But, and again, when you have a 24-hour news cycle and you have that much time to kill and that much space to fill, well, you know, sometimes you're going to resort to bringing in people that maybe you wouldn't normally bring in. And the best one I've heard so far is Don Lemon on CNN had a toy airplane where he was trying to, explain the theories of what might have happened. And so Don sat at his little anchorman desk with his little toy plane and you know, talked to everyone, told everybody about what he thought might have happened to the plane. So that was all fun. And that's CNN, and they're in big trouble. And that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother show. But again, you are going to bring in people maybe that you would not necessarily bring in to such a serious situation like this. And, well, like I said, tomorrow we are at the two-week – this will mark 2 weeks since this plane went down. And, well, now we're resorting to psychics. Yes, my friends, psychics.
In the past, governments have used psychics to help with searches. Can they use a psychic here?
It may seem an odd question, but I know these people have been used in murder investigations on many, many occasions. Radio Tweak investigators sometimes use psychics. Why hasn't anyone considered the services of a credible psychic specializing in missing persons? I mean, it sounds incredible, but they have been used before.
Good to be with you tonight. I'm Lynn Berry. Dr. Drew has the night off. I'm back with Jenny. And Jenny, when I heard him talking about that, I saw your face. You were making a couple of them. What are you thinking?
Yeah, look, I am all for wanting to believe in mysticism and psychics and stuff, and there are these tremendous stories where they figure things out. But I don't know, Lynn.
You're not alone.
No,
you're not alone. Social media comments, right. Controversy, skepticism surrounding the use of psychics to help find this flight are out there.
It's great.
Yep, a lot of people are out there saying that. Sam's still with us, joining us as well, though. Lisa Williams, a psychic medium, and Les Aben, CNN aviation analyst and a 777 pilot. Lisa, I'll start with you. You know, your theory here is that this plane landed somewhere. Some of the passengers are still alive, but the co-pilot was involved. I'm going to start first and foremost with, there are people at home right now that are going to shake their head at that are going to be disappointed that you would take that leap when you don't have hard, concrete evidence. What would you say to those people?
Well, naturally, I don't actually have hard, concrete evidence. And I think any psychic who has hard, concrete evidence can't do their job correctly, because they get misinformed, they get interpreted, and they'll just work on what they know. So I tend to work off what I don't know.
Okay, so what goes to that? Less, you're a naysayer when it comes to psychics, but they have been used in murder cases and a lot of criminal cases. What's your reaction to what Lisa's saying?
Well, to what success? With no disparaging Lisa's profession. I mean, listen, I'm an airline pilot. I deal in black and white. It's difficult for me to in this particular circumstance to think that a psychic could solve a problem that people all over the world are not able to solve at this point.
And I think probably, Les, you're not alone with that. Sam, you have a question for Lisa?
I do, and I say why not? I want to hear what Lisa has to say. Lisa, you believe that this plane was hijacked and that some of the passengers are still alive. Do you have any idea where the passengers are being held, if this is indeed true?
Well, this is actually an interesting question because I do believe that it actually crashed and I see a lot of trees. I didn't specifically look into this for a reason because I'm actually reading for some of the family's friends.
Wow.
Therefore, I've actually only looked at it today and I saw them landing in a lot of overhang of trees. I kept feeling as though, yes, there are some people that have passed away because it's only natural after these amount of days someone is going to cross no food, no water. But I also believe there was a hijacking, and I think there is also a larger organization behind all of this that is leading us off track with this debris. I think they're leading us off track, so therefore it's all kept hush hush.
Lisa, that's her theory, and there are a lot of people out there that have theories. Les, I'm curious what your theory is.
Okay, now you might say that maybe you might think that for someone like me, as a witch, I do read tarot cards, and I do think that to an extent that some psychic and some mysticism, some of those things, there is some truth to it, because it's happened to me, it's happened to other people that I've seen. But I don't know if you're doing a pretty hardcore, pretty serious news story like this. And yes, I know that the police, bring in psychics a lot on missing persons cases and things like that. So I don't know. It seems to border on the silly. And in case you missed it, this woman was also saying that she has done some readings for some of the family members. When you're in that situation and you're just looking for anything to hang on to and any sort of hope, I can certainly understand why some of the family members might turn to someone like her. But as far as bringing her on a cable news station to talk about this, I think it might border on the silly. Everybody can make up their own minds, but it is what it is. As much as I hate to say that, I hate saying that, and here I am saying it. It is what it is. But again, that is the latest on this situation. Who knows how long that this is going to go on for, and it's going to be a day-to-day situation, and we'll see what happens from here. Let's just hope and pray that I don't know at this point that everybody has their own theories about what might have happened to all 239 of these people on board this plane, but let's just hope that some closure is found soon, whatever that kind of closure may be for these families. Also, while we're searching for the missing plane, of course, we have also the latest on all the happenings in Russia this week. And, last weekend, I believe it was last Sunday, they voted, people in the Crimean region of Ukraine voted whether or not to remain part of Ukraine or to break off and become a part of Russia. And this was voted on and they voted overwhelmingly to become a part of Russia. And you know, the biggest elephant in the room in this situation, of course, is Russian President Vladimir Putin. Vlad's an interesting guy. He is. Earlier this week, President Obama, I believe also with Secretary of State John Kerry, they announced some sanctions on Russia. And really, the meat and potatoes of this is economic. I think what they are trying to do is get Vladimir Putin's attention economically. And it says here, this is from the New York Times, that American and European sanctions rattled Russia's economy pretty much today. The Moscow stock indexes opened sharply lower, forcing agencies to threaten to reduce their creditworthiness. It's obvious at this point, right out of the box, that any sanctions that are going to be put on Russia because of this situation will be economic. And a lot of people who are close, who are actually speaking out, and people who know Vladimir Putin, people who are close to him. This is not an identified source here, but it says, if the aim of the sanctions is to put economic pressure on the wealthy allies crucial to President Vladimir Putin's continued grip on power, there were few signs that they would succeed, largely because those targeted are among the new generation of oligarchs who owe their fortunes and loyalties to Mr. Putin. And it's funny because usually when you hear about sanctions being put on a specific country, put on a specific nation, that it's that entire nation. And this is kind of odd because a lot of the people here involved are individuals. When these sanctions were announced, again, keep in mind, we're dealing with a guy like Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin, of course, as everyone knows, is a former KGB guy. And so he's pretty hardcore. But it says here that as soon as the announcement was made by President Obama, Vladimir Putin was joking around about it. He thought it was funny. And it says here, at a meeting of his National Security Council on Friday, he reacted dismissively when discussing those now on the American blacklist, as it has begun to be called, including three people that were in the room with him. And in a very deadpan sort of way, Mr. Putin said, well, we should distance ourselves from them. They compromise us. So right now, the whole thing is a big joke to him. And, is it any wonder, given the fact that if you look at Barack Obama's track record anywhere around the world right now, why on earth would he take this seriously? What indication would he have that we're going to go all hardcore on him? There is none. Do know here also in this report here by the New York Times, it says that Visa and MasterCard ceased operations with Bank Russia, which was targeted by the new sanctions, because as the United States officials said, it served as a personal bank for senior officials of the Russian Federation. And whatever these political consequences that they are trying to maybe by imposing economic sanctions, that this is going to morph into political consequences for Vladimir Putin, the uncertainty of it all really is going to fall on average everyday Russian citizens. You kind of knew that was coming. And what's also interesting here in this New York Times piece is that it says, despite the threat of diplomatic isolation and sanctions, the return of Crimea 60 years after the Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev transferred it to the administrative control of Ukraine has been greeted with overwhelming popular and political support that has sent Mr. Putin's ratings soaring to the highest level in 5 years. So that's pretty interesting, too. I also saw a report the other night, too, someone who spoke with Russians living here in the United States. I'm sure some maybe having lived here for a long time and had become American citizens. Others were just here merely Russian citizens living and working in the United States. And there wasn't, I think maybe there were, oh gosh, maybe five or six people interviewed in this particular piece. And there weren't a lot of people who had a lot of bad things to say about Vladimir Putin. And one of the most common things that people said was that he was strong. He was a strong leader, and he did what he said he was going to do. Like him or hating, that is it's a strong leadership quality. Basically, you know, you do what you say you're going to do. But there was also in this New York Times piece, there's actually some people here who are listed as people who have some economic sanctions put on them. One of the people here also, a guy, and I'm going to butcher these Russian names, oh my gosh, Alexander Shachkin, president of the Russian Union of Industrialists and Entrepreneurs, a kind of club for oligarch interests. He said, these might be long-term consequences. It'll be hard to attract foreign investment now until the investors already working here understand what the risks are. So what they're saying here basically is that, you know, it's going to be trouble in the long run, you know, for anyone that is looking to invest in the Russian economy. You know, I'm certainly not an investment expert as well, neither maritime nor investment expert. So, you know, how good of an investment in the Russian economy? In the Russian economy, you know, who's to say? But anyway, like I said, it does give here. It actually names a couple of names here. It says this same guy here, Alexander Shachkin, is someone who has known Vladimir Putin for years, and a lot of these people kind of rose through the ranks of Russian politics together. Putin, and it's kind of his posse of buds here. A couple of people here that are mentioned are two brothers, Boris and Arkady Rotenberg, who Mr. Putin befriended as a young man practicing martial arts in Leningrad. So I guess, is that another excuse for him to take his shirt off? He goes to do the martial arts thing in Leningrad, and, you know, he's all very manly and all that. That these two brothers, whom he met practicing martial arts as a young man in Leningrad, as St. Petersburg was called in Soviet times, Yuri Kovalchuk, the largest shareholder of Bank Rossiya, whom the Department of Treasury called one of Mr. Putin's, quote, cashiers, unquote, and Mr. Yakunin, a former Soviet era commercial and trade attaché at the United Nations, who first met Mr. Putin when he was a deputy mayor of St. Petersburg. So, like I said, a lot of these people, and I really find it kind of odd that the administration is kind of picking out individuals to target, you know, given their track record of targeting individuals, maybe that's just kind of par for the course for them. But, you know, the thing is with all of this is that I think that a lot of us can look at all of this and, you know, like it says in that report there, the New York Times, that Vladimir Putin is sitting in, you know, he's sitting in cabinet meetings joking about this. And, again, like I've said, that what about anything that Barack Obama has done anywhere around the world would give Vladimir Putin cause to say, hey, maybe I need to take a step back and listen to this guy because maybe he really means what he says, and there's going to be some hell to pay for this. I mean, does anybody think that he believes that? Because I certainly don't. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens now from here. You know, they have voted in the Crimean Peninsula to become a part of Russia. And, you know, what happens next? Does Vladimir Putin go somewhere else? It is just, you know, engaging in this one maneuver enough for him, and then that's the end of it, and he just goes on about his business. I don't think that's the case, that there's got to be some other plans here, a broader plan in mind for him. And, you know, we'll just kind of have to see what happens and see where it goes from here. But anyway, I am going to take a break. I am really glad you guys are here hanging out, chilling out with me. I got a couple of little other in our second half hour here, some little odds and ends, some little tidbits, some things fun, some things not so fun. But, you know, all in all, it's cool. It's all good. It's cool. And stick around because I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. Listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. It is Friday night. People, we have dragged our sorry butts to the end of the week, to the end of the line, and here we are, finally. Did you ever think it would come? I didn't. It was iffy there for a while, but by God, here we are. Thanks for hanging out and chilling out with me tonight. We're talking, of course, about, oh my God, why would we not talk about the plane? We're talking about the latest on the missing Malaysian jetliner. We were also discussing the goings-on in Russia and how Vladimir Putin is basically, you know, having a big chuckle, having a big belly laugh at our expense, and why would he not? But also this week, let's see, I got a whole bunch of little tidbits here, little odds and ends here. This is, this was a survey that the AP did on Obamacare and cancer hospitals, cancer patients, that kind of thing. And basically what it said here, it said there were about 19 or 20, I think, nationally recognized cancer centers in the United States here. And basically what's going on here is that it says some of America's best cancer hospitals are off limits to many of people now who are signing up for coverage under the nation's new health care program. Doctors and administrators say that they are concerned. So are some state insurance regulators. Like I said, this is an Associated Press survey, and they found examples coast to coast. Seattle Cancer Care Alliance is excluded by 5 out of 8 insurers in Washington's insurance exchange. MD Anderson Cancer Center, which is one of the top cancer hospitals in the nation in the Houston area. Memorial Sloan Kettering is included by 2 of 9 insurers in New York City and has out-of-network agreements with 2 more. MD Anderson Cancer Center says it's in less than half of the plans in the Houston area. In all, only 4 of 19 nationally recognized comprehensive cancer centers that responded to the survey said patients have access through all the insurance companies in their state's exchanges. Also along with this is yet another unintended consequences, and they seem to be never-ending. Well, they will be never-ending because, again, we're just at the beginning of this, is that when people go online to shop for healthcare plans and to sign up for this, that it's hard for them to tell that should, God forbid, that if anything serious like this happened to them, that they would be included, their health plans would be accepted by these hospitals and by these cancer centers. And so what that means is that you have to do a little homework on your own, and you have to do a little digging on your own. And the thing with that is that, and I'm certainly not trying to demean younger people and say that they wouldn't take the time to do it, but you're going to have to do your own digging and do your own homework to find out, hey, if, like I said, God forbid that I would need a facility like this, is my insurance plan, is my health plan going to cover it? And so that is one of the problems with this. It says, for now, the issue seems to be limited to the new insurance exchanges, but it could become a concern for people who still have insurance through their employer. So that remains to be seen if that would in fact happen to everyone, not just people who are signing up for Obamacare. I'm sorry, there's a correction here. It says the AP surveyed 23 institutions around the country that are part of the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. Let's see, of the 19 that responded, 4 reported access through all insurance. Kimmel Comprehensive Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins, Fox Chase Cancer Center in Philadelphia, Duke Cancer Institute in Durham, North Carolina, Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center in Nashville. So there was, of all of these facilities, only 4 of 19 that responded, you know, you can access them through every single health plan. That's scary. And in fact, even right here in St. Louis, Melanie Lapidus, Vice President for Managed Care at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, home to Siteman Cancer Center, said she doesn't think patients realize the exchanges offer a more restrictive kind of private insurance. Lapidus cited Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, which does include Siteman in many of its plans outside the Missouri exchange, but none within the exchange. She goes on to say that we've had many people say to us, I picked Anthem because you guys are always in their products, and I assume you would be in their exchange products. It's still hard to tell who is in network and who is not. So, again, there is this problem of when you go online to buy these healthcare plans that it's really hard for you to tell what's included and what's not. And, it's funny because I think we all know that if Obamacare was, if it had been a success right out of the box, the website had worked, people were having no problem signing up for coverage, everything was included, it was an insurance utopia for everyone. If everything was working exactly the way that liberals have always explained to us that it would work, you know that they would have absolutely no problem calling it Obamacare. But listen to this reporter ask Nancy Pelosi about Obamacare.
Current environment in a swing district, is Obamacare a winner or a loser politically?
Well, you have to ask the member, but I believe that it's a winner. And by the way, it's called the Affordable Care Act. It's called the Affordable Care Act.
Affordable.
There's a reason. Affordable. 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 The reason they changed the name of it is because they wanted to get away, the opponents, from the word affordable. This isn't about politics. This is about the health of America. This is about standing tall, as the country did, on Social Security, Medicare, Health Affordable Care Act. So this isn't we don't weigh its value as to what it means politically. We weigh its value as to what it means to the health, well-being, economic, and health security of America's families. Any bill that's passed is not perfect. I wanted single payer. I wanted public option. So, you know, I have some changes I would make myself. But as the implementation takes place, as we see improvements that can be made to any compromise, which the bill was, we'll do that. But just because people say, I don't want to repeal it, but I do want to fix it, doesn't mean they're walking away from it.
Just remember that now. Just remember, kids, it's affordable. It's the Affordable Care Act. It's affordable. Who's she trying to convince, me or her, that it's affordable? Well, now, if that little tidbit wasn't enough for you, well, I found another good one, too.
What you're seeing now with the Republicans not being willing to work with the president is highly unusual. I've never seen anything quite like that. On the other hand, President Obama has all along extended the hand of friendship to the Republicans. And recently, as the State of the Union on the subject of the immigration bill, willing to work with the speaker, all these many months later, but respectful of the speaker's role in bringing a bill to the floor. So this is about as nonpartisan president as I've ever served with under, and I think that his record of wanting to be cooperative.
You know, what planet? I mean, are there other inhabitants on the planet that she is living on? Well, I guess the answer to that is yes, there are, because the other inhabitants of that planet are people like Charlie Rangel, people like who's the dude from Georgia who thought that Guam was going to tip over? Those apparently are the inhabitants of Planet Pelosi. You can't even say anything. I'm just going to leave it at that. You know, and there's another good clip here, too. The president contradicts himself so often, and particular clip that I want to play, it's a little bit lengthy, and B, I don't know how it is. I don't know that I can really link it to anything that really I'm talking about tonight, but it's such a great illustration. And this is Congressman Trey Gowdy from North Carolina, and when he gets on a roll, there is just no stopping him, and he is so awesome, and he tells it like it is, and that's really why I wanted to play this tonight, because it's such a fantastic facts are facts, and you can't refute them. And you know, I know that that's a problem for liberals, that they try as best they can to get away from the facts, but the facts tend to chase them and follow them and stalk them, and so they're just unable to get away from them. But like I said, this is a little bit lengthy, but he tells it like it is, and this is it.
I'm going to read a quote, and then you tell me who said it. These last few years, we've seen an unacceptable abuse of power, having a president whose priority is expanding his own power. Any guess on who said that, Mr. Speaker? It was Senator Barack Obama. Here's another one. No law can give Congress a backbone if it refuses to stand up as a co-equal branch. The Constitution made it. Senator Barack Obama. What do we do with a president who can basically change what Congress passed by attaching a letter saying, I don't agree with this part or that part? Senator Barack Obama, I taught the Constitution for 10 years. I believe in the Constitution. Senator Barack Obama.
You know, I taught constitutional law for 10 years. I take the Constitution very seriously. The biggest problems that we're facing right now have to do with George Bush trying to bring more and more power into the executive branch and not go through Congress at all. And that's what I intend to reverse when I'm President of the United States of America.
And my favorite, Mr. Speaker, one of the most important jobs of the Supreme Court is to guard against the encroachment of the executive branch on the power of the other branches. And I think the Chief Justice has been a little too willing and eager to give the President more power than I think the Congress or the Constitution originally intended. So my question, Mr. Speaker, is how in the world can you get before the Supreme Court if you don't have standing? What did the President mean by that when he looked to the Supreme Court to rein in executive overreach? If you don't have standing, how can you possibly get before the Supreme Court? So my question, Mr. Speaker, is what's changed? How does going from being a senator to a president rewrite the Constitution? What's different from when he was a senator?
We've got a government designed by the founders so that there'd be checks and balances. You don't want a president who's too powerful, or a Congress who's too powerful, or a court who's too powerful. Everybody's got their own role. Congress's job is to pass legislation. The president can veto it, or he can sign it. But what George Bush has been trying to do as part of his effort to accumulate more power in the presidency is he's been saying, well, I can basically change what Congress passed by attaching a letter saying, I don't agree with this part or I don't agree with that part. I'm going to choose to interpret it this way or that way. That's not part of his power. But this is part of the whole theory of George Bush that he can make laws as he's going along. I disagree with that. I taught the Constitution for 10 years. I believe in the Constitution and I will obey the Constitution of the United States.
And if a president does not faithfully execute the law, Mr. Speaker, what are our remedies? Do we just sit and wait on another election? Do we use the power of the purse, the power of impeachment? Those are punishments. Those are not remedies. The remedy is to do exactly what Barack Obama said to do, to go to court, to go to the Supreme Court, and have the Supreme Court say once and for all, we don't pass suggestions in this body, Mr. Speaker. We don't pass ideas. We pass laws, and we expect them to be faithfully executed.
I've got a pen, and I've got a phone, and I can use that pen to sign executive orders and take executive actions and administrative actions that move the ball forward.
That's the good thing about being president. I can do whatever I want.
So there's just a little bit of there's a little bit there of Congressman Trey Gowdy, who's basically laying out the facts and comparing Senator Barack Obama to President Barack Obama. And, well, yeah, there's a little bit of a difference there, just a tad bit of a difference, isn't there now? Well, you know, I guess we probably should have seen that coming. Well, we did see it coming. Just the people that voted for him didn't see it coming, I guess. But, you know, I'm sure while they are trying to sign up for Obamacare that, well, maybe they're discovering it now, aren't they? But so there is that. Also, recently, this is kind of interesting. It's actually really kind of chilling and scary along with being interesting, is that the United States is considering relinquishing, easy for me to say, remaining control over the Internet. And I wrote about this over at Conservative Cauldron blog. This is serious, people. I mean, it's something that we really need to try to stop, if at all possible. The change here, it says it would end a long-running, this is from the Washington Post, dated March 14th, The change would end the long-running contract between the Commerce Department and the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, or ICANN. This is a California-based nonprofit group. And basically what they do is they assign domain names. That's basically kind of they have control over the assignment of domain names. And you know, this is there's several things to consider about this. Is that who would actually be who would control be turned over to? Are we going to turn it over to those bastions of freedom and liberty like Cuba and China, Libya, you know, someplace in the Middle East? How are the Saudis going to take female journalists and female bloggers saying what they think? That's kind of a sore spot with me personally. I mean, there's that to consider. And, of course, there's the biggest thing to consider, actually – even before the biggest thing to consider is all of the rules and regulations that would be put on small businesses, because nobody else is going to curb fees like we do. And the problem with that is that you have so many small businesses who rely so heavily on the internet for advertising because it's a cheap, easy way to get their message out, get their products and their services out. And, you know, we know that would come to an end most likely. And again, the biggest thing here, free speech. What kind of censorship? Because I think we know. I don't know how you could say, oh, well, I don't really think that would happen. I think it absolutely would happen that regardless, unless it's a country like in Western Europe, I don't think that censorship is going to be a problem for anybody. And That's serious. That's a serious thing here. There are several people here, and I quoted them in the blog, who think that this is a good thing. Gene Kimmelman, president of Public Knowledge, that is a group that promotes open access to the Internet, says he thinks it's a step in the right direction. The president of ICANN promises open transition, open inclusive process. The rub on this is that there is going to be a meeting actually tomorrow. I'm sorry, Sunday, March the 23rd in Singapore. It's an international meeting to discuss this. And so we will be watching this very closely to see what happens here, because I suspect that if this has been something that has been initiated by the United States and by the Obama administration, it has something to do with the silencing of conservatives. You know, I'm just going to put it out there. Maybe I sound all paranoid, but I don't think so. I think that maybe they have found a way to silence conservatives, and then they can say, well, it's not our fault. We weren't controlling the Internet, and there you go. But another little tidbit here is that Fortune magazine put out a list of the 50 great leaders of the world right now. And, well, guess who's not on the list? Can you guess, kids? Can you guess? That's right. President Barack Obama was snubbed in this list on the 50 greatest leaders. I do have the top 10 here. Like I said, this is in Fortune magazine, and you can find that there. Number one, of course, was Pope Francis. And I think everybody's pretty cool with that choice. I mean, he seems like a very I think he's done a lot to turn the church around. I think he's done a lot to put it in a more positive light and crack down on the things that need to be cracked down on. I don't think anybody has a huge problem with that. German Chancellor Angela Merkel was number two. Number three, CEO of Ford Motor Company, Alan Mulally. Number four, Warren Buffett. Number five, former President Bill Clinton. I'm going to butcher this name big time. Number six, Aung San Suu Kyi, chair of the National League for Democracy. General Joe Dunford, Ford. He got a promotion, didn't he? General Joe Dunford, commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Bono came in at number eight. The Dalai Lama, spiritual leader of the Tibetan people. And rounding out the top ten is CEO of Amazon.com, Jeff Bezos. So that is the top 10, according to Fortune magazine, their top 10 great leaders in the world right now. And again, left off of the list, our very own President Barack Obama. Things that make you go, So there's that. Also this week, on your dime, Michelle Obama, her daughters and her mother are on a over a million dollar trip to China. And she's going there to promote education and kind of going, she has this whole mom-in-chief thing going on where she's, you know, doing that kind of thing. And, well, the Obama ladies are staying at a very swanky Chinese hotel. And word on the street is that, well, Michelle's mom is kind of, I don't know, she's not been very nice to the staff, the hotel staff. She's kind of barking orders at them and ordering them around. And, you know, yes, they're there. She is their customer, but I don't think that gives her the right to, you know, manhandle them like that. The Secret Service has taken up, you know, this entire block of very high-priced rooms, and it's just the employees at the hotel, word is that they're pretty well set up with the whole freaking thing, with the whole Obama thing, because they say while Michelle and her daughters have been very nice to them, you know, mom, not so much maybe. One of my final things here tonight, I don't know if everybody's heard or not, but Fred Phelps, who is the founder and pastor of the Westboro Baptist Church, passed away this week. And, well, this is kind of one of the things that he's kind of one of the people that free speech is designed for. I don't know how much of this we can take, so we'll just, here you go.
God hates you. And I mean that in the kindest way.
And this nation's under the wrath of God Almighty, and this nation needs to be told that.
And you,
that's
you think
the
that
message,
part of...
And that's,
you think part of being a good American is to have signs like those that we've just shown?
I'm telling you that that's the only righteous message for this evil nation that has gone the way of the Brokeback Mountain. A decent regard for the opinions and practices of all mankind for 4,000 uninterrupted years demands that these perverts, after 4,000 years of calling them faggots, still be called faggots. God's wrath is upon this nation, and he's pouring out that wrath by killing these soldiers and maiming these soldiers in Iraq and sending them back in body bags, and it's only going to get worse.
Pastor Phelps,
metaphoric language of the scriptures is that smoke is coming out of the nostrils of God and fire is coming out of his mouth.
I think it's already...
Now that means that God is cursing this nation.
I hear you.
And
listen,
this nation must be told that, and anybody that has just a little... teeny-weeny knowledge of the Bible knows that that's the truth.
Listen,
this nation's only be going from bad to worse under
the
wrath of God Almighty.
Already recognize
all these
exactly.
To stop
now, hold
us
on.
To
just hold on for a second here and let me get away.
Okay, I'm done with Fred. So I'm going to do something here that's kind of the anti-Fred and say that Wiccans and pagans this week celebrated the vernal equinox, the beginning of spring, and the beginning of the season of fertility and new beginnings and fresh ideas and fresh thoughts and fresh everything. So there is that. That's the anti-Fred. I'm almost out of time here tonight, so I am going to say thank you to everyone for listening tonight, for hanging out with me, chilling out with me. Please go to newsninja2012.com. I am one of the contributors to that website. It is awesome. I have some awesome colleagues that are fantastic writers. Please go there. Please check out conservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Please go to facebook.com/BeckyNoble. Go to Twitter @PatriotWitch. And I want to thank everyone for hanging out, chilling out with me tonight. We will definitely be talking more, I'm sure, about the missing plane and the Russian situation and a whole lot of other things next week. So with that, thanks, everybody, for hanging out with me tonight. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. See you next week.